It's Monday, March 29th, and up next, Fifth Monday. Today, Washington took its place at the forefront of the modern anti-slavery fight in 2003 when the state became the first in the nation to criminalize human trafficking on the state level. What forced this problem to be faced head-on? Why did it take 6 years to see the first conviction? Today we'll hear about human trafficking in the Northwest. We'll learn from KUOW's Sarah Lerna what the scope of the problem is, and we'll come to understand Washington State's historic role in combating it.
The Showbox Soto in Seattle is transformed into a dining hall. Guests are finishing their chicken and fish. Many already won hotel stays, climbing trips, or African scarves in the auction raising money for the Asian and Pacific Islander Women and Family Safety Center. A woman walks up to the podium. She wants to tell her story tonight. She was a human trafficking victim.
3 years ago, that was before I came here to the United States. I had many beautiful dreams. People promised me that they would love me like their daughter or their sister. But when I got here in the U.S., my dream did not come true.
Two women stand with her. They don't say a word. The speaker was so nervous, she asked her case managers to join her. She's not saying what kind of work she did or where she lived, but we know it was here in Washington.
Every day, they pushed me to do the job that I did not want to do. I have to work from 6 a.m. to 1 a.m. Sometimes they woke me up at 2 a.m. in the morning and forced me to work. They did not allow me to go anywhere by myself.
The woman doesn't want me to say what country she's from. Her abusers know people. They could track her down. But she's free now and safe. This woman's story parallels so many. Perpetrators might know their victims, prey on their hopes, bring them here, and keep them isolated once they arrive. Trafficking of persons doesn't only mean moving people. 22 Chinese stowaways snuck into Seattle in a shipping container down at the port a few years ago. That was smuggling. If someone arrives that way and is then sent off and coerced into doing some sort of work, that's when the situation becomes human trafficking. The simplified definition is forced labor. Kathleen Morris is at the dinner, too.
I'm the program manager for the Washington Anti-Trafficking Response Network, also known as WARN.
She was one of the women standing in support at the podium.
You know, we think of trafficking as this huge network of organized crime, which it can be, but it can also just be, you know, a couple that wanted a nanny but didn't want to pay for it.
Morris's job is to assist human trafficking victims, anything from helping them obtain a visa to signing them up for English classes. She also educates the public. She has a personal policy to never say no to a speaking engagement.
I think when people hear human trafficking, they think about sex trafficking mostly. A lot of people probably think of an Asian woman who's young and maybe working in a brothel or a massage parlor. And that's true, but it's not the only image that there is.
She says she wants people to understand that, in her experience, labor trafficking is more prevalent than sex trafficking.
We see construction workers, restaurant workers, domestic workers. We see people in agricultural work.
Ann Morris says in the area of human trafficking, our region sees a lot of activity.
I hear that over and over and over again, hotspot, hotspot, hotspot. The U.S. government, Department of Justice, recognizes that Washington State is a hotspot for human trafficking. We are on an international border. We have an international port. We have a huge agricultural industry in eastern Washington.
We may be known for being a hotspot, but Washington State is also known for something else. We're leaders in fighting human trafficking. We were one of the first states to receive federal grants towards anti-trafficking efforts. We're better at identifying victims than other states. Our success stems in part from bills passed in 2002 and 2003.
Mr. President, 43 yay, 6 excused.
Having received a constitutional majority, Substitute House Bill 2381 is declared passed. The title of the bill be the title of the act.
Washington enacted historic legislation, the first state-level criminal statute on human trafficking. That's because we were forced to face this problem head-on after a series of tragedies.
I would not have introduced the bill if it weren't for those murders.
Velma Valoria was in the House then, representing Seattle's 11th District. She was one of the first Filipino-American state legislators. Now she works for a nonprofit and refers to herself as an activist. She remembers how it all began.
Okay, so in 1995, Susanna Blackwell, who's a mail order bride, was murdered in the King County Courthouse while she was waiting for her day in court, along with her two friends.
Susanna Blackwell was from the Philippines. She met her husband from Kirkland, Washington, through an international matchmaking agency. She moved here and married him, and he soon began abusing her, physically and mentally. She eventually leaves. Later, they fight in court over the dissolution of the marriage. 25-year-old Susanna brings two friends to the courthouse to testify on her behalf. Both are Filipino women.
So they're sitting there waiting for their time to go to court. And Susanna Blackwell was already 8 months pregnant. The guy comes through, shoots her right through the stomach to kill the baby and her, and then her two friends.
Valoria says at this point, the Filipino community is up in arms. Then, over the next few years, two other high-profile incidents surface involving abuse and mail-order brides, and one of them is another murder.
What we did was, like, we turned this anguish into anger.
Valoria works with local women's service providers. They begin asking questions. They find other women from abroad who also have no support system, who are also expected to work as servants.
And then we began to say, okay, there's something happening here. It's not just a mail order bride issue. There is something deeper.
Valoria realizes the problem goes beyond domestic violence. This is domestic servitude. It's a form of human trafficking. By 2001, Valoria helps organize a human trafficking conference at the University of Washington. By 2002, she has a bill ready. It'll put money toward a study that'll examine the scope of human trafficking in Washington state. She's hoping to gather evidence to show the real impact of the problem so the following year she can pass the bill that makes human trafficking a state crime. In February of 2002, it's time for the House floor debate on Representative Valoria's bill. Both Democrat and Republican legislators support it with short speeches. Then it's Valoria's turn.
A state with international borders and international airports and waterways that bring Washington that much closer to Asia, and a consumer population. Yes, this state is a consumer state for trafficked women. Traffickers find this state a lucrative market. So I urge you, please, support this bill. Thank you.
It passes the House without opposition. Then the bill makes its way through the Senate. 2 weeks later, the Senate Judiciary Committee holds a public hearing on it. It's a big day for Valoria.
I wanted to make sure that a lot of the folks that I had worked with would come to testify in favor of it so that there was no excuse that the legislature would not vote in favor of it. So I organized everybody, and to my surprise, there was this man. I didn't know where he came from or who mobilized him.
I guess I'll speak first. Sure. My name is Haitri Lee. I'm an employee of Microsoft Corporation.
And I was kind of watching, and I was hoping that he would be there to support the bill.
There's a garment factory named EUSA established in 1999 in American Samoa, a territory of the United States.
Lee is a Vietnamese-American who works for Microsoft. He tells about terrible labor abuse at a garment factory in American Samoa. The female workers weren't allowed to leave, and they weren't paid. The company operated there so its products could carry the Made in USA label. Lee brings two survivors to the hearing with him.
I was really thankful that he was there to support the bill. And it really kind of clinched it, because then he had the victims there.
The bill passes out of committee. A week later, it passes in the Senate. Valoria is thrilled. The next year, 2003, she's able to pass the bill that makes human trafficking a crime. Washington State has pushed itself to the forefront of the human trafficking fight. Now Valoria can relax a bit. She's helped make this horrible injustice a crime under Washington state law. She watches and waits for state charges. And waits. The years go by. Nothing happens. No one is prosecuted under a human trafficking charge. Until 2009.
What?
It's November. Velma Valoria is driving to the King County Courthouse. Prosecutors charged 19-year-old Deshaun Cash Money Clark with two counts of human trafficking. He's accused of being a pimp and coercing young women to work for him as prostitutes. This is what Valoria has been waiting for.
It's great, because I think that now we can begin to test the law. Before, they said, oh, the law is too unwieldy, we don't need to use it, blah, blah, blah.
In 6 years, this is only the second human trafficking state charge. The first, by a prosecutor in Spokane in 2007, was dropped in a plea bargain. Why so few charges? Valoria has her suspicions.
I think a lot of the reason that it took so long to use it is because people, number one, didn't know that there was a law, and then number two, didn't know how to actually use it to charge the criminals.
King County prosecutors say other cases just weren't appropriate for a human trafficking charge. Plus, they acknowledge, when it's time to test a law, they want a slam-dunk case. There are many charges on the federal level. The Western Washington U.S. Attorney's Office is known for actively pursuing human traffickers. That office saw 14 cases related to the crime in the last 3 years. But Valoria believes state prosecutions will bring more attention to the issue locally. And state convictions.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Deshaun Cash Money Clark, guilty of the crime of human trafficking in the second degree.
Clark eventually is sentenced to 17 years in prison. The case is on appeal now. Valoria is pleased, but it's bittersweet. She'd rather there not be any human trafficking. But she has another reason to be excited. The spotlight's been shining on human trafficking lately, beyond this King County trial.
Suddenly, there's a lot of activism around it. A lot of it has to do with the fact that the education is happening. That's what I wanted to do. That's what I wanted. I want the Attorney General to take up the issue. I want all these other people to take up the issue. I'm excited. I got the work started, okay? And now it's up to the activists around this issue to continue and move it forward.
Farm workers' rights advocates say regulations in the agriculture industry leave an open window for human trafficking crimes to slip through. Next, we'll learn how one man found himself in Washington, trapped, penniless, in debt, and fearing for his family's safety.
Washington State is home to 39,000 farms. We produce more apples here than anywhere in the U.S., and more cherries and hops as well. And migrant workers find opportunities here.
A Mexican national can earn 6 times more working here in the United States than they can in Mexico.
Eric Nicholson is the National Vice President of the United Farm Workers. He works on guest worker program issues. He's based in Tacoma and also oversees operations in Washington and Oregon. Nicholson says workers are willing to pay to get set up with a job.
A recruiter comes into communities and says, I can get you a visa, what we call a non-immigrant visa, an H-2A visa, or a guest worker visa, but it's going to cost you. You've got to pony up $3,000 to $5,000, and that's increasing. Well, not increasing. That's rampant right now in Mexico, and workers are trying to figure out ways that they come up with that money.
They'll borrow from friends, family. They'll even take out mortgages on their homes in order to pay the fees.
But what generally happens is the recruiter will offer some type of scheme that they have access to a loan shark. They'll find a part of the money. But usually with some implicit or explicit threat of violence. You better show up. You better be a good worker. And, you know, by the way, I know where your family lives. Something ugly could happen to your family if you get uppity.
It's illegal for a U.S. employer to provide guest work to someone who paid a recruitment fee to get the job. But sometimes the recruiters and employers are one and the same.
The first thing that happened was the employer confiscated his passport and travel documents.
Meet immigration attorney Lori Isley. She's explaining what an employer did to her client when he arrived here under the H-2A program. Without documents, the man couldn't leave or get around on his own, and things got worse from there.
There was one circumstance in which there was no food. The worker was very afraid to go out because there had been these threats. If you go out in an unsupervised way, you will be sent home.
Home, deep in debt, to lenders who threaten with violence. The man had paid $11,000 in recruitment fees. Isley works for Columbia Legal Services in Yakima. She says her client mortgaged his home to pay the recruiters. They promised 3 years of work in which the man could earn triple the initial $11,000. He arrived in Washington State, worked in a rural area for a few months, and made $1,500, and then no more work. Next, the employers held him under 24-hour guard.
The worker became very concerned about his situation, and actually the worker called the only people really he had contact with, and those people drove several hours to rescue him from that situation.
The man eventually ended up getting connected to Isley. She helped him with the application and verification process to receive a T visa, which is awarded only to proven human trafficking victims. Isley says she's nervous about revealing identifiable information about this man, or his family, or the people who helped him. She says it's too dangerous.
How is it that he's not safe? I mean, does it mean that somebody could go after his family?
Yes.
So that really happens?
Certainly, workers are threatened in that manner, and whether those threats would be executed on is very hard to say, but given the circumstances in which the workers were held, I think it's a legitimate fear on their part.
Workers' rights advocates say problems arise when local farmers are able to distance themselves from workers and their potentially questionable financial or legal status. That's because sometimes farmers hire labor contractors who hire recruiters who hire workers. Mike Gempler is executive director of the Washington Growers League. His take on the likelihood of human trafficking in agriculture here is another story. He says only a tiny 1-2% of Washington farmers even use labor contractors. The rest pay their employees directly. And rules are in place to make sure the contractors are reputable.
When they hire a farm labor contractor, they darn better well make sure that that contractor has a state and federal license and that it's current, it's on file with the Department of Labor and Industries and the U.S. Department of Labor, that they put up the required bond. Because anybody who jumps through those hoops, pretty good chance they're legit.
And as for recruitment fees, Gempler agrees they are a problem, but he says he doesn't know how high they are. And more importantly, he says they're charged in workers' home countries, never here. And that makes them tough to regulate. Gempler is in his office in Yakima, where a Friend of Housing Award from the state hangs on the wall. It's among dozens of how-to VHS videos on things like tractor safety, protection against skin cancer. Gempler says what happened to Isley's client is absolutely rare. He only knows of one instance of this type of abuse. In 2004 and 2005, the California-based farm labor contractor Global Horizons brought about 175 workers here from Thailand. In 2006, Washington State revoked the company's license for violating wage and labor laws. Accusations include withholding payment, failing to provide adequate living conditions, and even failing to feed the workers properly. Gempler says Global Horizons hurt the reputation of the entire industry undeservingly.
It made things rough for us. You know, as soon as you say the word now, people think, say the word H2A, people think, oh, global, you know, and Thai workers. And it happened once. I don't know of it happening any other place in Washington State.
I would be stunned if there were not cases actually out there right now in agriculture of human trafficking.
Again, the UFW's Eric Nicholson.
How many? It'd be purely speculative on my part, but I would be stunned if those cases did not exist. Everything indicates to me that conditions are absolutely ripe for that to be occurring right now.
Still, as far as proven human trafficking cases in agriculture in central or eastern Washington, there aren't many. In fact, after extensive research, I only found two, one being Isley's client. Kathleen Morris is one of only a handful of people who work full-time on human trafficking issues in Washington State. She's the program manager for the Washington Anti-Trafficking Response Network, or WARN. She's seen cases in agriculture in western Washington, but not in the rest of the state.
That's the thing, is that unfortunately, our time building awareness in eastern Washington and central Washington was so short, and our funding was cut, and we lost that ability to reach out there on a regular basis. So we haven't found those cases yet.
Morris says human trafficking is a hidden crime. Victims might not know what their rights are or that they have access to help, and they're afraid.
I've gotten calls from community-based service providers in central Washington who had a case sitting in front of them, explained to the people what the process was, what the resources we could provide were, and what their options were, and the people chose not to come forward. So that fear can't be discounted.
Morris hopes that by educating the public on human trafficking, the message will spread to victims as well. That's why she's thrilled she received a grant last year to fund two new full-time human trafficking outreach staffers, one in Spokane and one in Yakima.
What do you think? Yakima.wom.com wants you to tell us.
It's a hot day in Yakima, and Morris is in Griselda Guzman's car. That's her new outreach coordinator. They're headed out to lunch and just getting to know each other.
I got stuck in the pass.
and took like 8 hours to drive back, and I've never gotten over it.
I like the Stevens Pass better than the Song Hong Pass. Yeah.
Later, they go back to Guzman's office. Morris gives her an overall orientation on human trafficking, teaching everything from what it is to how to build an anti-trafficking coalition.
Start with the people you're already comfortable with. You know them, you know, and start going, meeting with a few people here and there, doing presentations here and there, and then, you know, then you can slowly start to step out of your comfort zone and go into people that you don't know and you're not sure what the reactions are going to be.
It's Guzman's first week on the job, and she's pretty quiet.
Does that all make sense? I feel like are we going all over the place, or are we good?
No, it's fine.
I tend to go off on tangents.
After 2 days of intensive training, Morris returns to Seattle, and Guzman is ready to roll. A month later, she's in her office, and she exudes more confidence than she did those first days on the job. She's already met new people and scheduled presentations. Pamphlets surround her with slogans like, "Look beneath the surface," and "Human trafficking is modern-day slavery."
I think it's exciting because no one else is doing my job, at least here in Central Washington. And it's something fairly new. Some people know about it, some don't. So I could say, well, I could explain a little bit more about my, you know, what's human trafficking. Because I've talked to some people that they just have no clue about human trafficking.
Back in Seattle, Kathleen Morris is feeling hopeful.
In the past 6 months, we've seen more Spanish-speaking client victims come forward. And I don't think it's because suddenly there are more Spanish-speaking victims. I think it's because the message is getting to the community that they have rights here and that what's happening to them is not okay. So it's going to continue, and it's just a matter of getting the word out, and we're doing the best we can.
In the end, it's clear farmers aren't enslaving their workers on a massive scale across Washington State. But it's also clear human trafficking is a reality in agriculture here, just as in construction, manufacturing, nail salons, or potentially any business.
From bake sales to running events to political schmoozing, anti-human trafficking activism is exploding. Now, why awareness is rising, who's involved, and whether efforts are being focused in the right areas. We continue in Seattle with KUOW's Sarah Lerner.
It's a sunny, hot day in Seattle. In Magnuson Park, a band cranks out tunes on a temporary stage to a crowd in running shoes. They've already finished the fundraising walk. Tables with green awnings surround them, offering baked treats, flyers, t-shirts, water.
Good stuff. All right, everybody, thank you so much. We have a dance troupe coming up next.
On stage now, Mandy Maxwell. For months, she's been planning today's money raiser for Stop Child Trafficking Now. It's a nonprofit based in New York.
We're going to have William Demps. He's amazing. You can hear him on the radio on C89.5 on the Gospel Show on Sundays, and I highly recommend you listen.
A year ago, Maxwell was jogging with a friend when he told her about SCT Now. He said they wanted a Seattle ambassador. Maxwell didn't even know about human trafficking, but she heard a few statistics and...
I was like, no, this is not okay.
Things like...
There are about 2.5 million children being sold and traded for sex. There are 27 million people enslaved around the world.
Some lower estimates put it at 12.3 million. Next thing she knew, Maxwell had agreed to produce this event. Insurance, food, beverages, speakers. She found a partner to help, and before she arrived this morning, they'd already raised $13,000.
If this is how all events go, just sign me up. I'm in awe. People stayed till the end. The bands all showed up. We didn't have any injuries. The walk was a success. The weather, I have a farmer's tan, and I love it.
At the Showbox Soto in Seattle, the Asian and Pacific Islander Women and Family Safety Center hosts its annual fundraising dinner. Former Washington State Representative Velma Valoria sits at a table up front. She was instrumental in passing the first bill in the country making human trafficking a crime on the state level. It's campaign season, and she's invited two of the Seattle Port Commission candidates to the dinner. She wants them on board with the anti-trafficking cause. One, Rob Holland, just arrived and joined Valoria's table. It's something he couldn't miss.
When Velma says come somewhere, show up, I show up. But I'm very interested in learning more about the issue. So.
Human trafficking is the theme of the night, and it's not long before the table conversation turns to it. Holland tells Valoria it doesn't come up on the Port Commission campaign trail. But for her, that's not enough.
Not at all.
But the thing, too, is that you don't raise it. You don't put it up.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, I never got an opportunity to tell you about it when you came to the Filipino community.
Right.
Because there was no room to say, hey, Rob, what do you think about human trafficking?
Right.
Perpetrators sometimes use the port to bring victims in. It could be slipping through SeaTac Airport legally or as stowaways on ships through Puget Sound. Either way, the port is part of the equation. Valoria tells Holland why she's trying to stay close to the issue.
You know, if you're going to reform the port, part of it has to do with making sure that people know about human trafficking.
Holland went on to win a Seattle Port Commissioner spot. His bio on their website touts his efforts to fight human trafficking. So far, since his election, the port hasn't made any changes, but Holland says they're coming, soon. But there is some concrete political action. Three bills related to human trafficking have already passed the legislature this year and now await the governor's signature. The bills put new restrictions on people who hire foreign workers. They also call for the placement of signs at rest stops along I-5 in hopes of reaching out to victims. Meanwhile, last year, King County won the first human trafficking conviction in the state. Still, there are estimates of as many as 17,000 victims in the U.S. every year, but only a fraction have been officially identified. Our state task force has identified only 70 over the last 2 years. Mandy Maxwell and Rosie Ludlow are just a few of the local activists stepping up in droves. With all this effort, the hope is that the men and women and children stuck in slavery in Washington State and around the world will also be able to come forward. I'm Sarah Lerner reporting.